The next case is 090015, Brian Spitznagel versus State Board of Education.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Stephen Funk, Rexland Andrus, on behalf of the appellants in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This is a very important case for the village of Walton Hills. Many of the residents are here today. Over 80% of the residents signed the petition to transfer their village because they recognize that a public school district is a very important ingredient of a viable community. And over the past 15 years, the number of students in Walton Hills who actually attend the Bedford City Schools has dropped from 150 in 1994 down to only 34 today. And there's actually a, yeah.
Council, could you explain to us where the rest of the kids are going to school right
actually,
now?
Actually,
I saw in your brief it's a small fraction of the school-aged children in
right.
the community go to Bedford.
I actually learned this morning that there are about 26 students that actually pay tuition to attend Cuyahoga Heights today. Cuyahoga Heights has a tuition policy because that allows students from outside the district to attend that school. The other students would attend other other private schools or other schools other than the public school. But I don't think that that's ultimately what the future of the village is. The future of the village is really to have a viable public school system that's connected with its community. But before the court today, why this court accepted jurisdiction, is to decide two legal questions of law that will not only affect this petition, but will affect virtually all school transfer petitions in the state of Ohio. And those two questions of law are dealing with the financial impacts of the transfer and the racial impacts of the transfer. And what we're asking for is essentially for this court to uphold the legal analysis that was adopted by the Court of Appeals in Spitznagel 1. In Spitznagel 1, the Court of Appeals was very explicit that they were not reweighing the evidence in the record, but were simply looking at the hearing examiner's own analysis to determine whether or not it violated 10th District precedent and was not in accordance with law.
Spitznagel 1 relied on Barchi in its appellate stage, and we reversed Barchi and that required a reconsideration. So what do you believe Barchi stands for? What do you think is the holding in Barchi? And what was wrong about how the Court of Appeals applied it?
Yeah, the Court of Appeals did cite Barchi, but they decided other 10th District cases as well. And they cited those cases simply for the legal proposition that the mere loss of revenue is not a sufficient basis for denying a school transfer petition, which is what the hearing examiner...
Which I don't think... is in dispute, and
okay.
I think what's in dispute here is a factual issue. Is this a mere loss, or is this a substantial loss? Because the Barchi loss was considerably less than the loss here. I don't care how you cut the figures, because
right.
I know there's two very different interpretations of the figures, but they still end up in the millions of dollars, which is significantly higher than Barchi.
Well, and that really gets to my point, which is that Barchi did not overrule that legal principle of law. Barchi was a plurality opinion. There was three justices in the plurality, three justices in the dissent, and one concurring.
And so if you believe Barchi stands for the mere loss is not sufficient, then don't we come back down to a factual question of is this a mere loss or is this a substantial loss?
And that's not the question of law that I meant to articulate. What I meant to articulate is that merely presenting evidence of a loss of revenue is not sufficient. What needs to
so
be done...
So you want us to rule that loss of revenue, if there's nothing else but loss of revenue, no matter how big or small it is, cannot justify denial.
What I'm asking the court to do is to decide what the legal standard is. And the legal standard, as I read the regulation, as I read 10th District precedent, is that the board needs to not only calculate the amount of lost revenue, but needs to actually analyze whether or not that loss will be detrimental to the fiscal or educational operation of the district.
But there's lots, as I read the briefs, lots of analysis of that. The teachers that have, the programs that have to be cut, the teachers that have to be laid off, there's a whole parade of horribles they list. To what more is required, in your opinion, than what they list?
Well, if you look at the hearing examiner's second report and recommendation, and this is really what the Court of Appeals focused on, and that's because what happened was is that there was a House Bill 66 in between the first and second hearing. The State Board recognized that they needed to send it back for another hearing in order for the hearing examiner to reevaluate the impact on the district in light of House Bill 66. When the hearing examiner got the decision back, all that he did was calculate the loss of revenue, and then the error arose when he said that the Village of Walton Hills could not show that they could completely mitigate that loss down to zero, and never evaluated what the impact of the net loss would in fact be on the district. He simply presumed that unless it was not mitigated all the way down to zero, then that was not a significant detriment. And that's what the Court of Appeals in Spitznagle 1 said was a legal error, because, you know, there was no actual evaluation of the impact. It was simply, unless you can show me that it's completely mitigated, then there's going to be, I'm going to find a significant detriment.
That's not exactly how I read it. He may have made a legal error in saying you have to mitigate down to zero, but factually, there was a lot of evidence presented as to the detrimental impact. The fact that he didn't cite it doesn't get rid of the evidence. So don't we have an obligation, in your view, since you're asking for a de novo review, aren't you?
We're asking de novo review of the legal issue, which is whether or not the hearing examiner actually applied the correct legal standard.
And if we find that he didn't correctly apply the standard, are we permitted to go further and look at the facts that are in the case and determine if under the new standard or the standard you want us to adopt, it's still you still win or lose?
I would submit that what the court should do is to simply do what the Court of Appeals did in Spitznagle 1, which is they did not reweigh the evidence in the record. They took the hearing examiner's decision on its face, and they analyzed whether or not he applied the correct legal standard. Upon finding the legal errors in his opinion, it wasn't just the financial, but it was also the racial impacts, and those were the majority of the factors that the hearing examiner relied on. They found that those errors were committed and then remanded it back to the board for further evaluation. That's what I would submit the Court of Appeals should, or this court should do here. And this court accepted jurisdiction to decide those two legal questions, those two propositions of law.
Is the argument here on the evidence about the financial detriment, as what happened between the first hearing and the second hearing? That is, apparently there was sufficient evidence after the some evidence after the first hearing of what financial detriment and impact it was going to have on the school. But as I understand what you're saying, after the second hearing, there was no analysis of what that apparently reduced financial impact was going to have on the school. But the hearing examiner said, well, there's going to be some. I don't know what it is. There's going to be some, and that's sufficient. Is that?
That is correct, and I think the Court of Appeals spells it out very, very clearly in Spitznagle 1. And what happened was that it was dramatically different. The financial picture was dramatically different. At the second hearing, we had presented evidence also of additional mitigation steps that could be taken into account by the Bedford City Schools. And the court and the hearing examiner found that he agreed with two of those steps. One was $600,000 in cost savings per year, and the second was the additional remediation repayments that the school district would be receiving under Senate Bill 321, which was another new law that came out after the first hearing. And if you look at the chart that's on page 98 of the record, it spells out that even after those two steps, the amount of revenue loss is actually mitigated and almost down to zero by fiscal year 2010. So what the hearing examiner did was, instead of actually evaluating what the net impact would be, he went on and said, and it's spelled out on page 6 of his second recommendation in footnote 8 and then again on page 8, that because we were unable to show that it went down to zero to completely take care of the entire loss, I find that there's a significant detriment. And that's what the Court of Appeals said was the legal error. And it clearly is, because in every school transfer petition, you're going to have some loss of valuation or loss of revenue because you're either transferring territory or pupils. That's going to happen in every case. So the question under the regulation and under 10th District precedent is not whether or not there's going to be a loss. The question is whether or not the loss will actually be detrimental to the fiscal or educational operation of the district. And in this case, unlike Barchi, in Barchi, if you remember, there was no actual evidence presented by the petitioners relating to fiscal impact. In fact, the school district didn't really present any evidence either. In this case, we presented a significant amount of evidence relating to the fiscal impact. We had an expert testify about possible mitigation steps that could be employed, what the per pupil expenditures would be, what the cash surplus of the district was, which was at that time $9.9 million cash surplus in the district. All of that evidence was presented to the hearing examiner, and we had an expert opinion say that the net loss or the ultimate through all these steps, this transfer can occur without a significant financial detriment. The hearing examiner, instead of evaluating that evidence, instead of actually analyzing it, simply said, you didn't prove to me that it would take it down to zero. Therefore, I find that there's still a significant detriment.
So what's the per pupil valuation of the Bedford School District?
What is the actual amount per pupil? I don't know that number off the top of my head. It would be in the expert's report.
Ballpark.
I think it was like $9,000, $10,000, something like that per pupil.
Per pupil?
At that time. I don't know the number off the top of my head.
And Cuyahoga Heights valuation.
Cuyahoga Heights, I think, is substantially larger. It's also in the expert report. And I think that what the evidence...
I'll park that.
I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it might be $15,000, $16,000 per pupil, but I don't know. It would be in the expert report, which I don't have in front of me. The key thing, I think, that what the Court of Appeals was looking at and what the hearing examiner looked at, or what the hearing examiner should have looked at, is what is an ultimate loss of revenue going to be an impact on the fiscal educational operation of the school district. So if you look at, you know, the per pupil expenditures, if you look at the overall budget, if you look at the overall cash surplus, you look at other potential cost savings that the hearing examiner found, or the expert said was $600,000, hearing examiner agreed would occur. All of that goes into an ultimate analysis as whether or not this is going to have a significant financial detriment. The hearing examiner took the easy way out. He didn't do any of that. All he simply did was said, unless you can show me that all of these things will be done so that it will be down to zero, therefore there's a significant detriment. And that's really what the Court of Appeals seized on, was a financial detriment. And I submit that in Barchi, that's not what Barchi held. That's not what Barchi did not compel them to reconsider. They, though, felt that it did.
I want to come back to just the general value, and I don't think your ballpark numbers are probably even close to right, but I realize I'm asking you something that you apparently haven't focused on for purpose of our argument. The Bedford School District, as it's presently configured, would be where? In the sort of the middle range of Cuyahoga County school districts in terms of the wealth?
I think that it's on the higher end. And I think I think that the expert report...
Cuyahoga Heights would be on the high end.
Cuyahoga Heights would probably be on the highest.
Highest.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Right. There's no question. The record is clear. I think it's undisputed.
And what does Walton Hills, what does it contribute to this? Where does it fit in?
You know, the village of Walton Hills has about 2,000 to 3,000 residents. It's got, as we said, it's got a small number of school children. So
have a lot of industry, a lot of...
It does have, and the tax revenues that it produces are set forth in the record as well. I think that it's undisputed that Cuyahoga Heights has an excellent academic reputation, that it is only 15 to 20, has a central campus that's only 15 to 20 minutes from the Walton Hills Village Hall, and it has relatively small class sizes. It has relatively a small school population. So the expert testimony...
Well, as well it should if it's the wealthiest district in Cuyahoga County.
Mr. Funk, before you sit down, the other proposition of law is whether the State Board of Education should consider the racial factor. You haven't addressed those. Would you care to comment
yes,
on that?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I think that it's the evidence is undisputed that this has a very, very de minimis impact on the racial compositions of the two districts. And what the Court of Appeals said in Spitzenkel 1, I don't think that it really even reconsidered it in Spitzenkel 2, that you cannot rely on race as a negative factor given that set of facts. And I think that the recent authority from the U.S. Supreme Court that we cited...
What is it that the State Board did that you're contending is erroneous?
The hearing examiner found that it was de minimis impact, but it nevertheless said that that de minimis impact was a negative factor that weighed in against granting the transfer. And there was only seven negative factors, and two of those factors were race. Four of them were the financial. So, you know, the race factor being cited as a negative factor, we think it should have not been a factor at all. In other words, it should not have been treated as a negative factor in any way, shape, or form, and that if you're going to rely upon race as a basis to deny a school transfer, it needs to have a lot more evidence than just a de minimis impact that was here. And we think that that was legal error, and that was an additional reason why the Court of Appeals reversed in Spitzbingle 1. I just reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Funk. Mr. Marty.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Todd Marty. I represent the State Board of Education. I'll be splitting time with Bedford and would like to use about 6 minutes of the appellee's time. The State Board's position is that the petitioner's analysis overlooks two dispositive aspects of this case. First and foremost is the fact that the petitioners did not make a positive case for transfer. Fiscal impact is a negative factor. It comes in to determine whether an otherwise meritorious transfer proposal has excessive costs, costs that are so high to outweigh that whatever merit or benefit is shown. The one thing that Barchi undisputably establishes is that petitioners have the burden of showing the merits of a transfer, making the positive case to change the status quo.
Okay. If that's the standard, there's never going to be a transfer because it would only be positive if you're getting rid of undesirable territory, that is where they send a lot of students and have no tax base, and unloading it on another school district.
I would disagree with that, Justice Pfeiffer. There are educational considerations that should justify transfers separate and apart from the financial impact. In this case, the petitioners relied on three somewhat educational impacts.
Their quick and dirty statement of facts is that it's a horrible place to send our kids, and it's demonstrated by the fact that there's only 45 kids now going there, and that Bedford's getting a free lunch off of this community. They're getting the tax base, and the kids, because of the conditions in the school, are being sent elsewhere.
Your Honor, that's what they say, but that's not what the hearing officer found. They relied on three grounds for this transfer.
Well, is it true that only 45 of the school-aged children in Walton Hills are
yes, it is, Your Honor.
Going
to yes, it is, Your Honor.
And that's that 83% of the kids are going elsewhere?
Yes, but that's not one of the criteria for transfer. The transfer criteria focuses.
Isn't that about a free lunch for Bedford at that point? If the kids are all going elsewhere and the tax base is going to Bedford.
Your Honor, the criteria is the educational merit of the proposed transfer. In this case, they pointed to three factors that they claimed showed educational merit: academics, school safety, and social isolation. The hearing officer expressly and strongly rejected each of those as a matter of fact, finding that the petitioners not only didn't prove those facts, but that the evidence went to the contrary.
Who picks the hearing officer?
The Department of Education, with concurrence, I believe, of the parties. In any event, the academic and safety findings were never contested, those factual findings. The isolation finding was challenged on a factual basis at the Common Pleas Court. The Common Pleas Court rejected that challenge. So the only factual findings we have here is that there are no affirmatives for this transfer. That's not changed by the hearing officer's statement that several factors, quote, favor, close quote, the transfer. Those factors all go to the absence of harm, things like whether high schools will have to be closed, whether you lose enough pupils that you can't operate, whether they're non-contiguous boundaries. Those are negatives. And granted, those negatives aren't here, but they're not positives that show a benefit for the transfer.
Counsel, what is the tax valuation per pupil in Bedford?
Your Honor, I don't know. The figures that opposing counsel cited sound about right, Your Honor. My co-counsel could give you much greater detail on that. So the point is, there's no positive for this transfer. That makes the propositions of law, which go exclusively to negative factors, immaterial. We think that this court should therefore affirm under the core holding of Barchi that petitioners have the burden of proof, and that burden wasn't met here. But in the event that you go to the other provision here, the fiscal impact, and address it on the merits, we think there's another problem, another omission in the analysis, and that is that there is no precedent requiring the result, requiring reversal here. Crow and Levy are so different from this case that they don't require reversal, but in fact support affirmance. In Crow and Levy, you had almost de minimis losses, well under $100,000, well under 1% of the operating budgets of the districts involved. Further, those districts made no effort to show the operational impact of those losses. Here, real estate taxes alone will result in a loss of $4 million each and every year, regardless of how you slice and dice the personal property tax issue. Furthermore, that's about 10% of Bedford's budget. And those losses are real and significant, far more significant than we had in Crow and Levy. Further, the district put on, Bedford put on strong evidence showing specific programmatic changes that would have to happen. Some programs would be eliminated, others would be cut. And
did
it's important
they do that in the second hearing as well for the reduced loss of revenue?
No, they didn't. The second hearing dealt exclusively with the personal property tax, but we still have
but
the significant you, real estate
but if
losses.
You have a, if you have a reduced loss of revenue, wouldn't that change the financial impact? And the
to some extent, but the reduction was not, for example, didn't affect the $4 million every year in lost real estate taxes, which by itself could have an operational impact. I think the appropriate rule here is the well-settled rule under 119 practice, that when you're dealing with a technical question, you defer to the technical expertise of an agency that knows how to do this sort of thing. It's hard to think of an area that's more technical than school finance, and it's hard to think of a body that has more expertise than the State Board. The State Board sets statewide fiscal standards. It instructs districts on how to comply with them. It evaluates each district's finances every year, and that board has the body to determine whether the hit of this magnitude is sufficient by itself. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you for your time, Sean.
Thank you, Mr. Marty. Mr. Clark.
Mr. Clark, how much revenue total? $4 million in real estate taxes?
In perpetuity.
And how much else? Is there more revenue than real estate?
$7 million over 5 years. And then beyond that time, $4 million at least in real property taxes lost.
So how much a year would be the lost revenue?
At least $4 million a year in real estate taxes.
And how many students are going there from?
The record evidence is 45, Your Honor.
45. So how much is that per pupil?
I don't have a calculator, Your Honor.
I don't either. I'm going to divide it here. It's a pretty high number, isn't it?
But I think part of the point, too, Your Honor, is that, you, as you mentioned, the Cuyahoga Heights District is the wealthiest district in Cuyahoga County.
Right.
And one of the factors.
So what's the valuation per pupil?
I don't know, Your Honor. But the
well, you all are here making an economic argument. Nobody knows the valuation of any of the school districts. That's the base that everything, the whole formula operates off of.
I will give you one number, Your Honor, $65 million.
What?
$65
million. What's
that? $65 million is the amount of valuation that the Bedford City School District would lose as a result of this transfer. $65 million in valuation. And if you compare that to the court's decision in Barchi, the number there was $373,000. That would be lost in valuation by the Cincinnati schools.
Okay.
So as long as we're talking about comparison.
How many students are associated with that?
Which in Cincinnati?
No. The community you represent, the Bedford.
The Bedford schools? There are approximately 3,600 students at Bedford.
No. How many students are associated with the 65 million number?
45 students attend the Bedford schools from Walton Hills.
But there's a potential of how many?
260.
260.
And I think, Your Honor, the part of the problem here is the Cuyahoga Heights District is the wealthiest district in Cuyahoga County. And one of the distinct factors that the hearing officer found that's been overlooked in this discourse, it's a separate and distinct factor, is that the hearing officer found that this transfer would result in a windfall to Cuyahoga Heights. And it's a separate factor that he found would strongly disfavor the transfer, whether it's $4 or $8 million a year in revenue that Cuyahoga Heights would gain that would not be commensurate with the educational responsibility that the district would assume. Now, the appellants in this case contend or seem to contend that if you just strip away the financial issue, the financial harm to Bedford, that suddenly the state board had been poised to grant the petition in favor of the transfer and award the transfer. And that is not the record evidence in this case. The petitioners in this case did not meet their burden of proof, and the burden of proof requires them to demonstrate how this transfer would benefit all of the pupils in the two districts, not just the students who happen to reside in Walton Hills. And while that is important, and while I agree with Mr. Funk when he started his argument by saying that this case is important for the residents of Walton Hills, that is true, but it's also just as important for all of the residents of Bedford, Bedford Heights, Oakwood, and throughout Cuyahoga Heights as well. And that's what the hearing officer and the state board was obligated to determine. And so as a result of that, the evidence that the petitioners brought forward having to do with the reasons why they believe the transfer should occur only related to their own personal preference, having to do with safety, having to do what they deemed to be an inadequate education. And all of those...
My understanding is Cleveland Heights twice rejected the transfer. They didn't want Walton to come in. Is that correct?
That's true, Your Honor. Cuyahoga Heights, yes.
Cuyahoga. And if we were to allow the transfer to go forward, do they still have the right to say no?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And so where would we be? Still back at Bedford?
Yes.
And do we have any idea from the record that they would change their mind a third time?
We don't know, Your Honor. All we know from the record is that prior to the transfer effort in 2004, twice the Cuyahoga Heights Board determined that it would not accept the territory for whatever reason. We don't know in the record why that is.
And was the factor of the $4 million on the part of that discussion for their rejection?
That's not in the record, Your Honor. I can say that I attended the meeting where the two meetings
were. They knew that there would be a financial gain to Cuyahoga Heights School District in property taxes if they would accept the transfer.
Right, and they also knew that there would be a financial harm to their neighboring district if they were to accept the territory, yes.
How many students from Walton Hills currently attend the Cuyahoga Heights school system?
I don't know, Your Honor. Evidence isn't in the record.
I understand that a number of them are paying tuition to attend Cuyahoga Heights schools?
My understanding, yes, is that according to the record, the students from Walton Hills who attend Cuyahoga Heights pay tuition to do
what
that.
What tuition is that?
I don't know, Your Honor. That's not in the record. But Your Honor.
What is the status of open enrollment?
Cuyahoga Heights
is not accepting open enrollment.
That also isn't in the record, Your Honor, but my understanding is that Cuyahoga Heights does not accept students based on open enrollment, only based on this tuition program.
And does Bedford have an open enrollment? Not in the record.
What principle of law should come from this case?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I believe that
that's why I voted to allow the case, by the way.
Well, I believe that the syllabus in this case should be that the Common Pleas Court in this case did not abuse its discretion in denying the transfer based upon the economic harm that the Bedford City Schools would suffer, and also in light of the fact that the petitioners did not otherwise meet their burden to prove that the transfer would be in the best interest of all of the pupils concerned.
That doesn't sound like a principle of law to me.
Well, Your Honor, the reason I say it that way is because, frankly, I take issue with a logical predicate for the issue that the appellants contend is before you, because they contend that this ought to be the legal issue that this court has to articulate. I simply believe, Your Honor, that the proper standard of review for this court is no different than it was at the Court of Appeals, and that is that whether or not the state board abused its discretion in denying the transfer. I don't believe that the court has to go so far as to articulate a standard of law that's different than what's gone before, and particularly in light of the court's decision in Barchi.
So your argument then, as I guess in response to Mr. Funk's urging that the test was violated, that there was a new test that was created, at least by the Court of Appeals or by the hearing examiner, you'd say it's merely an application of an existing test.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I believe that here the hearing officer weighed all of the evidence in both hearings and made a decision based upon the evidence concerning financial harm and economic loss and all of the other factors, and the fact that none of the factors materially weighed in favor of the transfer, and properly denied the transfer, and that that was properly affirmed by the Common Pleas Court and by the Court of Appeals.
Mr. Clark, is it your impression that our promulgation of the Barchi case between the time of Spitznagel 1 and Spitznagel 2 materially changed the body of law such that the Court of Appeals was justified in changing its mind?
Do
you think that our decision was in accord with then law that was enacted?
I don't believe, frankly, that Barchi created new law. And I believe that the Court of Appeals erroneously applied its prior decision, its appellate decision in Barchi, to reach the conclusion it did in Spitznagel 1. I believe that once Barchi
was... Much seems to be made of the fact that it wasn't it was a plurality decision.
Right. Well, I believe, though, that if you look at Barchi, a majority of the justices of this court determined that the petitioners in the Barchi case had not met their burden of proof based upon the record evidence there. And I don't see how you can compare the records in those two cases and conclude the petitioners in Barchi didn't meet their burden of proof there, but here the petitioners in this case did. I don't see how those two outcomes can be reconciled based upon the comparative records in the two cases.
Counsel, while you've been talking, I've been dividing, and maybe it's not a legal issue, but it's fundamental to all of this, and that's the numbers. None of you lawyers are even close on what the value per pupil is, and that's fundamental to how you figure out whose ox is being gored here. My calculations are, with 45 kids coming to Bedford schools and $4 million in tax revenue, Bedford, the village of Walton Hills, is contributing $88,888 per pupil to Bedford. And if all 260 of them came, they'd be contributing $15,000 per pupil to Bedford. So that's a big chunk of money. And the property tax valuation, you said, is $65 million, right?
That's the record evidence, yes, Your Honor.
260 students, that's $253,000 per pupil.
And I
not $15,000 or $9,000 per pupil.
And I think, Your Honor, that's the reason why the hearing officer in this case believed.
It's all about money.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. It isn't all about money. It's about the state board deciding what is in the best interest of the pupils. You're asking today a group of lawyers what they think the outcome of this case ought to be. I'm not an educator. I'm an attorney. The state board is educators. They have been given the authority to make this decision to determine what's in the best interest of all of the pupils in these two districts, not just the 45 or the 260 students in Walton Hills. And I believe that this court, the Court of Appeals, and the Common Pleas Court all owe the degree of deference to determine that the state board applied its principles correctly to determine that the transfer should be denied. I don't disagree with your numbers, but I believe that that's one of the reasons why the state board concluded that it would be an unfair windfall to a very wealthy district to receive these students based upon the commensurate...
Well, it's not going to be a financial windfall to the receiving district because they're already rich. It's going to be a financial loss to Bedford because they're getting a windfall. They're getting $4 million, and they're only getting 45 students. So,
Your Honor, I disagree. State Board's hearing officer concluded that it would be a windfall to the Cuyahoga Heights District. I can't stand here today and tell you that that was an incorrect conclusion.
You've used your time, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Mr. Funk, you've used your time, but to take a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. I just want to emphasize a couple of things. One is on the resolution. That was a 2002 resolution that was adopted, and that was adopted to just say at the present time in 2002 they were not ready to accept. But the way the process works under the statute
is they want the State Board to independently determine whether or not to approve the transfer. Once that process has been done, then it's presented to Cuyahoga Heights. And I can tell you that it's a much different situation when you're presented with a petition where if you accept it, it's going to happen, than if you're asked to prejudge it before the hearing even occurred. And at that point in 2002, we haven't had any hearings. So I would invite the court to not prejudge the Cuyahoga Heights' acceptance of this. We recognize that they can reject it. We are willing to go through the process because we believe that once presented with the opportunity to accept, that they will. And the board is different than it was before.
Would you like to respond to Mr. Clark's assertion that this is an abuse of discretion case?
Yeah. And I would ask the court to just look at the Spitznagel 1 decision, because what the Spitznagel 1 specifically talks about is not applying the legal standard. And what we talk about burden of proof, we met the burden of proof. We presented significant amount of financial evidence dealing with the financial detriment. That was the whole point of the second hearing. What the hearing examiner didn't say is, what the hearing examiner erred is that he imposed a legally erroneous burden of proof on the petitioners. He said, unless you can show that you've completely mitigated the loss, I find a significant detriment. That's not the legal standard. That's not what the regulation requires.
Counsel, I want to ask you for your response to the argument that because there were no positive findings, that that's the end of this case, and we don't really need to get to the rest because you have to have at least some positive findings in order to consider the negatives.
Your Honor, I would submit that that's not the case, that I think that we're entitled to a decision in accordance with law. What this went to the board, State Board, in 2005 after the first hearing. The board felt that it was necessary to send it back to reconsider the financial evidence, because the financial evidence was cited as the hearing examiner as the main reason for denying the school transfer petition.
Were there any positive findings?
There were positive findings. In fact, they evaluated all the factors. They said that 4 factors weighed in favor, 7 weighed against, and the rest were all neutral. And the 7 that were against, 4 of them were financial, 2 of them were race. And the other one was one that slightly disfavored.
What were the factors that weighed for it?
There's 4 factors. They're outlined in the decision. I just don't recall them off the top of my head. But one of them, for example, is the fact that it was in close proximity to the central campus of the Cuyahoga Heights. And they said, in fact, that the busing distances weighed in favor of the transfer if you find that a central campus is a valuable.
There was a community of interest. Was there a community of interest finding?
There was also, the evidence showed that there was a significant drop of enrollment. The hearing examiner did not dispute that. There was also affirmative evidence that Cuyahoga Heights had the capacity to accept additional students, that it had the buildings and the facilities and the class sizes to take in additional students.
What about the quality of the academic program?
I think the record is undisputed on that.
The report cards, school district report cards were in evidence?
There is evidence on the school district report cards in the record, and the evidence on that is undisputed because those report cards speak for themselves. Cuyahoga Heights has an excellent academic reputation, and Bedford's does not compare anywhere close to that based upon the academic report cards in the record. So I guess that the point that we're at the point now, and I think the justice is right that we're at a legal question, I think that Barchi did not compel a reconsideration of Spitznagel 1. I think the Court of Appeals felt that that was the case, and I would ask this court to correct that misunderstanding, allow the Spitznagel 1 decision to stand. It was well-reasoned. It was based upon 10th District precedent. It does set forth the accurate statement of law that this court should adopt for all school transfer petitions, and allow this proceeding to occur, or allow this transfer to occur in accordance with law, which is all that we're asking for.
Thank you, Mr. Funk.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our